Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Well, 2025 has certainly been a year where the headlines screamed AI revolution, the market charts looked like bubble sketches, and yet, quietly, emerging markets, including South Africa, have outpaced the global darling. So today we're asking, what's real, what's hype, and where the next decade's returns are hiding. Joining me is Dan Kemp, Chief Research and Investment Officer for Morningstar EMEA, to help us answer some of those very difficult questions. Dan, great to have you back on the show. And I must say, if you had told me at the beginning of this year that it would be the kind of blockbuster equity year that we've seen in developed and developing markets, I wouldn't have believed you. But here we are. We're sitting with the JSE on a kind of dollar basis, delivering almost 50% returns. World equities up strongly. And a lot of the narrative is sucked up by AI and how much we're spending on data centers. But before we zoom into all of that, give us your high-level take. What did you see actually driving returns this year?
Well, Michael, it is great to be back with you. Thanks for having me on the show. And I'm so glad you talked at the beginning about thinking about the next decade. And that's really the most important thing for investors, not to get too focused on what's happening immediately in front of us the next few months or the next years, even shorter time periods than that, but really to look longer term and think like investors rather than traders. And so when we came into this year, you're right, valuations looked a little bit high, particularly in the US. There was lots of good news around the economy and what was happening, particularly in technology stocks. And then, of course, everything came to a grinding halt in April with the announcement of the tariffs, and that really encouraged people to look outside the US at other markets that were trading at much more attractive valuations. So as we came into this year, we're encouraging investors to diversify, to look beyond US technology, look beyond the US market, because we saw some great value elsewhere. And of course, we didn't know what the catalyst was going to be to start unlocking that value, but you never know in investment. It's always a surprise, and it surprised everyone again this year. But nevertheless, we've got to this point in the year where emerging markets, other markets around the world, have done better than the US, despite the fact we saw that astonishing recovery in technology stocks following the tariff announcements in April.
Given that, let's talk about South Africa's performance in that context, because in US dollar terms, as I said in my intro, we're up north of 50% year to date on the MSCI numbers, comfortably ahead of EM and world. What's driven that from your vantage? Is it just higher beta to commodities and that weaker dollar that we've seen, or are there genuine improvements that you're seeing in earnings and risk premia underneath that give you confidence that this SA story is sustainable?
So far this year, we know that gold and platinum miners have done extremely well. They're now looking quite expensive. There's been that drive towards precious metals again, which was partly inspired by what's been happening in the US, the decline of the dollar, as you mentioned, and of course concerns about tariffs and global trade as well. So actually, I would see that as being very encouraging for South Africans investing in the home market, that it's not as if everything has rocketed in price, but the leadership of the market has been quite narrow, it's been quite concentrated, and that means there's still lots of opportunities around if you look more to the diversified miners or some of the financial counters. There's still opportunities for South African investors. And another piece of, or we could say it was bad news, but actually I see it as good news, is that there's been very little investment from external investors in South Africa so far. And that means that if there is this sustained recovery, if there's this sustained popularity, then we can expect some capital from foreigners to flow in as well. That hasn't happened yet. So actually, a lot of what we've been seeing in South Africa suggests that there's good opportunities to come. But of course, South Africa is only quite a small part of the emerging market complex.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to be such a large destination for capital as, let's say, China or another one of the very large emerging markets would be.
Absolutely. I mean, for an investor sitting in London or Frankfurt building a global portfolio, you're going to have a look at the emerging markets and be maybe allocating a little bit more to South Africa, but it's not going to see that same wave. And equally, I mean, for a South African investor who really has a lot of South African risk via their job and their house and their pension, how do you think about the right balance between exploiting those local hidden gem opportunities outside of the commodities complex and diversifying into global markets that are, frankly, more expensive but more diversified? And let's just say outside of the US, and we'll come back to the US because the US is so heavily concentrated and there's the whole Mag 7 AI debate there. Where would you be looking over the next decade to see potential outperformance outside of South Africa as a local investor?
Yeah, of course. Well, I think when you think about emerging markets more broadly, then we tend to think about them as being quite diversified because they stretch across the entire world and across many different types of country and economy. But the emerging market index can also be quite concentrated. So, for example, TSMC, the large Taiwanese semiconductor chip manufacturer, makes up over 9% of the global emerging market index. So when you're looking for diversification, it's really important to understand what it is that you're buying, to that deep research to understand what makes up these funds and these indexes in which you're investing. So within the emerging world, rather than just using an emerging market fund, we're seeing opportunities in Latin America, particularly more so than Asia at the moment. We saw some great opportunities in Asia over the last couple of years, but they've really been lifted by that rise in technology. And so we're seeing more opportunities elsewhere. And then when we look into the developed markets, again, which provides more diversification probably for South African investors, then we're still seeing very good opportunities in the UK and in continental Europe as well. And that's not just my bias. We're seeing this from our investment team around the world, that the UK and continental Europe is offering a good diversification opportunities because the industrial makeup of those markets is quite different from South Africa. It's quite different from the US, and as you mentioned earlier, that concentration to technology. So yeah, when looking for diversification, when looking for a way to spread your investments, then really think about what the underlying drivers of those investors are. Don't just look for a large array of names outside South Africa.
Yeah, and in continental Europe, certainly when Germany said that it's going to start spending again on defense, and I mean, we did see a big narrative shift around the investability in continental Europe. Let's just come back to the tech sector, and let's start with the B word up front. Dan, as an investor and as a researcher, how do you define a bubble? Because there's a lot of talk about AI now being a bubble. We're staring at estimates of what is it, roughly $3 trillion. I mean, a trillion, that's a lot of zeros. It's 12 zeros behind in global data centers spend through 2028. Maybe half of that funded by the hyperscaler cash flows and the rest by various flavors of leverage and private credit. So there is understandably a lot of concern. Are we in a bubble? What do you think?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that bubbles are only broadly recognized after they've burst. And that makes it very difficult for an investor to anticipate where the bubbles are. And it's really important at this stage in the market not to allow your thinking to be dominated by narratives, either the very positive narratives about how AI is going to change the world, or the very negative narratives about how all this capital that's being invested is going to be wasted in capacity that no one needs. When we look at the actual valuations of the hyperscalers and the companies that are making these big investments, then the valuations still look reasonable. They don't look as outrageous as they've done in some previous bubbles in the past. But that doesn't mean that sentiment won't turn against them, because a lot of the valuation, a lot of the value rather of a technology company lies far in the future. And of course, a lot can happen between now and then. So although companies like Nvidia may continue to grow at a terrific pace over the next year or two, a lot of its value is not in that growth over the next year or two. It's far into the future. And we think at the moment those estimates are a little too optimistic, particularly when they comprise so much of the US market. And that's why we've tended to have a lower exposure to those large technology companies, the large AI companies. But as you mentioned, when you're a lot of the money that's being raised is also being raised to the debt market. So you've got to be really careful that you're not trying to avoid AI through the equity market and then picking it up in debt. It's quite a complicated picture right now.
Yeah, it certainly is, with a lot of almost vendor financing, if you look at the circularity of some of the transactions that have been structured. And when it comes to diversification, I mean, if I own a US total market ETF, and I mean, Morningstar's work shows that the top 10 US stocks now make up more than a third of market cap. So it's extremely concentrated. So maybe I've got that. I've got a global growth fund and maybe a quality factor fund. It might feel diversified. When you look through the holdings at Morningstar, how often do you find that investors really just own very subtle variations of the same handful of mega caps?
Yeah, it's such a problem, Michael, because you create these fault lines in portfolios that it's often quite difficult to see in advance. As you say, because it looks like you're diversified. And that's why it's so important right now to understand what's inside those portfolios, what the individual stocks are doing, what the drivers of these holdings are doing. Remember, when a market has been as dominant, or theme has been as dominant as technology over the last couple of years, then it draws in capital from different parts of the market, from different investors around the world to try and follow that theme and related companies. And so it's likely at the moment that any investor in global securities outside South Africa will have quite a large exposure to technology. And as we make the point in the outlook, when thinking about the year ahead or the decade ahead, as I mentioned earlier, it's really important to prepare and not predict. So instead of worrying too much about whether this is a bubble or not a bubble, much better to think about what would be the impact on your portfolio if it did suddenly crash, and make sure that your portfolio is not vulnerable to just one particular outcome. As human beings, we tend to latch on one possible future. I think that's the only one that can occur. But we know that life is more complicated than that. There's a whole range of things that can occur. And so as an investor outside South Africa, you're likely to have a big portion of your assets in technology-related holdings. And so that's why we think diversification is more important than ever.
Well, I think that is certainly one very simple, very insightful portfolio, actionable takeaway from this year to leave with listeners. Diversification at times like this, even more critical. Dan Kemp, thank you very much. Chief Research and Investment Officer for Morningstar, EMEA. Good luck with the Welsh taking on the Springboks on Saturday.
We'll certainly need it. Thank you, Michael.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.